The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, EDU edition for this week. Given the current, I don't know if I'd call it chaos, but certainly volatility, an interesting ups and downs in the markets this week, we thought we'd talk a little bit about our approach to retirement planning and the fact that, in our opinion, market volatility should not lead you to reduced spending in retirement. If it does, maybe you should look at a different approach to retirement. So with that in mind, I've got Jim in the remote studio. He's going to join us, and we're going to talk a little bit about, remind people why we propose what we do as far as preparing yourself to spend in retirement and what's happening recently here with the markets is a reminder of why we propose that you do what we propose. I'm trying not to give it away. I want to let you do it.
You want me to give it away?
What is it that we propose in order to deal with this type of a situation if a person were entered into retirement, in retirement, or really close to retirement, getting ready to pull the trigger, and they're seeing this kind of market volatility?
Well, I mean, we do many things, obviously, folks. Our whole basis of the minimum dignity floor covered with lifetime secure income actually also helps adjust with market volatility. And for fund spending, we recommend portfolio management strategy that we call positioning. It's nothing unique. It's just asset liability mapping, if you will, where you're trying to take your portfolio of money and map it or match it to the spending that it's going to be tasked with. Part of what we do, if you're a longtime listener, you know we try to get people to understand. You're going to go through three distinct phases as a do-it-yourselfer, if you will. You're going to go through the accumulation phase of retirement, the transitional phase, which can be a very brief phase, and then the distribution phase of retirement. And how you manage your portfolio during all those phases will vary greatly. And this market volatility, Chris, that we're seeing now, and we're certainly not trying to be Chicken Little screaming that the sky is falling.
No,
that's not what we're doing. We just thought with the volatility that we're seeing, this could be a nice time again to chat about this. And I just started, as luck would have it, later last week, working with a few people on doing some positioning. And we started looking at some options. And I started looking at some MYGAs again, multi-year guaranteed annuities. And I found some interesting interest rates, if you will, on them. And I shared it with Chris, and he thought, you know, we should kind of do a show on this. So today's show is going to cover a few different areas, but it's all being driven by the volatility that we're seeing, which is perfectly normal, natural. It should be here. What was atypical or not natural as far as stock markets go, we're 13 years so far without a meaningful and prolonged correction. And I know we have hit bear market corrections several times in those 13 years by academic definition, but we have not experienced a true prolonged bear market, which generally lasts 18 or so months. We have had some 20% or more falls in the market or corrections. Correction territory is 10%. Bear market is 20%. We've had several of those over the past 13 years, but they never lasted very long. They were bailed out by the Federal Reserve and by the federal government through a lot of stimulus. So we're just trying to get people, listeners and retirees who work with us, to understand that market corrections are normal. And sometimes, Chris, I think they create more of a problem trying to prevent the problem. So trying to prevent a market correction or a recession, which is perfectly normal in a capitalistic society. Sometimes I think, what is that saying? The medicine is worse than the cure? Or something like that?
The cure is worse than the disease.
I thought it had to do with medicine.
It does. Well, no, that's how you might cure something, is with medicine.
No, but there's a saying that the medicine is worse.
Not worse than the cure, no.
Whatever. I don't know. Well, a teaspoon of sugar.
Yeah, you could say the medicine's worse than the disease. That would be appropriate.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I knew I had that saying. So today we thought we would chat a little bit about this, but we didn't want to come off as Chicken Little screaming and yelling that there's market volatility. This is perfectly normal. What we don't want is people in the transitional or distribution phase to have to reduce their spending, even if it's on fun things, which unfortunately, Chris, and why don't you add to this, the industry being the financial services industry, often does retirement planning with the notion that in times of market turmoil, you'll just reduce your spending.
Right.
What's the problem with that?
That's their fix. It kind of ignores natural human evolution, but the path we're all on, which is a path not of getting stronger and healthier as we age through retirement, but a path where we typically slow down and become a bit less healthy over time. And for some people, it's very rapid. For other people, it's very gentle. But it's happening to all of us in retirement, and just kind of flippantly saying, you know, if things don't go so well, we'll react by reducing your spending or whatever. We'll put off those trips or whatever you're planning to do. And then when things recover, I'm doing air quotes, you can't see, then you can resume what you were doing or do a little more or something to make up with it. But what they don't include is the rest of that statement should be, but something could happen and you could never do that again. You could never make up for what you missed. And I think that's where reality needs to play a part in this decision-making. And too many people dismiss or reduce the importance of being able to spend confidently through market volatility in the early go-go years of retirement, when you may have your last chance to do some of the more significant things that you saved up money to do. And so flippantly saying, well, we'll react by maybe a temporary reduction of spending if in the face of potential volatility is, in our minds, not the proper approach or not a prudent approach. A lot of people disagree with this, but that's the way we see things. And Jim, you know, revealed our part of our solution to that. I'm glad you pointed out our secure income ideas with covering the minimum dignity floor, because of course secure income is not affected by market volatility by its definition. So people should be able to clearly envision why the minimum dignity floor in the long term should be pretty well insulated from market events. But it's those early years where positioning, which you also mentioned, is critical, because that is right when you launch into retirement, you enter what we call that go-go phase, and heavy spending might occur, and maybe not all your secure income is turned on. So you're going to be relying quite heavily on your other financial resources other than secure income, other than your Social Security and other income sources you might have, because oftentimes that's going to happen a bit later. You retire before those turn on. And so, you know, it's management of or handling of that those assets outside of your secure income, where positioning is going to make all the difference in the world for you to be able to confidently spend through a tumultuous period like we seem to be having this week. Now, maybe this is going to be another flash in the pan like we've seen previously. There's been little, you know, little hints. Oh, here it is. Here's the beginning of a correction. Oh, never mind. They called it off. I don't know. Next week might be a different story. But right now, it seemed like a good time to talk about this and remind people.
So a couple of things. If you are not retired, if you are still in the accumulation phase of retirement planning, which is generally people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, and into their 50s. Some people may go briefly into their 50s. Others may go all through their 50s. But the accumulation phase is generally the phase where you're still saving, folks. You're still adding money. In the accumulation phase, market volatility is actually your friend. If you are saving on a regular basis, you'll be taking advantage of what the industry has called dollar cost averaging. In other words, as markets are going down, your steady stream of monthly investing is buying more shares. And if markets are going up, yes, you're buying fewer shares, but those shares are appreciating. Accumulation planning is easy. It truly is. And all you do it yourself are Vanguardians. If you have children or grandchildren and they start freaking out over market volatility, and even though Chris said this could be a flash in the pan and very well may be, it could actually be the beginning of a prolonged or a real market correction. 20, 30, 40% lasting 12, 18, 20 months before recovery begins. It's typical. It's normal. It's nothing to panic over. If you have someone in the accumulation phase, their 20s and 30s and even 40s, and they start panicking over that, you got to pull them off the side. You got to get them off that ledge and tell them to smarten up. You're buying things on sale. Who doesn't like to buy on sale? That's a wonderful thing. But if you are in the distribution phase, this is truly where a down market has the opposite effect. We did a whole show, I think it was 2 years ago now, Chris, called The Opposite, where we tried to point out to people retirement is the opposite of everything you Vanguardian do-it-yourselfers were doing in the accumulation phase. And selling in a down market, consuming assets in a down market, you fall victim to reverse dollar cost averaging. You have to sell more shares of your investments, leaving you fewer shares to recover when the markets eventually do, and they always do. Don't know how long it'll take, but they always will keep moving back up. It's what capitalism is about. So in the distribution phase, short-term volatility could be volatility over a few months or volatility over a few years. That volatility, if you don't have your investments positioned correctly and you start consuming, especially minimum dignity floor expenses, which are truly difficult, if not impossible, to cut, you need food, utilities, transportation, housing, and health care to be covered. And we acknowledge on the fringes you can eat cheaper food, dine out. Well, dining out would be fun. But you can eat cheaper food in the grocery store, go to different lower cost grocery stores. but it's very difficult to truly reduce a non-discretionary minimum dignity floor expense like you could a totally discretionary fund expense. And we'll get into that a little bit deeper on the show today. But what I want people to understand, positioning is designed to deal with what the industry calls sequential risk. And what do we mean by that, Chris? For retirees, we'll talk about sequential risk for retirees. And here's the thing, most academic research will say the beginning half of your retirement is when you're most exposed to sequential risk. The problem, nobody knows what half their retirement is. So generally, you'll read the first 8, 10, maybe 15 years of retirement is the truly most risky period of retirement. You'll often read, which we firmly believe in, day one of retirement is the riskiest, and then the risk technically gets less and less each day into retirement. But what they're saying is you're getting one day closer to death where downside market isn't going to truly negatively impact you. But what do we mean by sequential risk, Chris?
Well, sequential means in what order do they happen? And we're talking about the returns in your portfolio. When, if you were to have a buy and hold portfolio, no cash inflows, no cash outflows, the order in which returns happen over a period of time is irrelevant. Doesn't matter in what order they occur. You're going to end up at the same spot. During the accumulation phase, there is some effect of sequential risk that could harm or hurt you, but you can easily overcome if it's harming you by saving more or saving for a little longer period of time, etc. But on the distribution side, the order in which returns happen is very important. And if you have suppressed or negative returns early in the distribution phase, those are most harmful, far more harmful than they are if they happen later on. Why? Well, because your portfolio is theoretically at its largest size, assuming you're going to draw it down. Some people aren't going to spend enough to maybe do that, but typically you're going to start consuming that portfolio and it's going to go down over time. So you're using it to fund things. And when there's negative returns early, that eats away at more of that body of the portfolio. And Jim nailed it when he mentioned you've got fewer shares then to recover when the recovery does happen. It causes more harm to the body of your portfolio than it otherwise would. And that effect is magnified when you happen to be unlucky enough to have poor returns in the early years of retirement. If those same returns happened later, they would have less of an impact on you. And that's what we're worried about. It's that whole fear that, gee, as I'm filling the bucket here, I've got a lot of control. I've got other resources like my salary coming in. But once I retire, all I've got are the resources I've built. I no longer have that paycheck coming in, and I'm going to have to start using this. And if I'm unlucky enough, and it's very frustrating to think about your retirement going to be based on luck, but if you are unlucky enough to have negative returns early in the process of retirement here, that can be very scary and very harmful. So you need to prepare to be protected from that in some way. You've got to protect yourself against, I think, two things. The financial harm, which is what I was describing. There can be true financial harm that undermines your financial situation by having poor performance early in retirement. But also the emotional issues that are created by this. You might not really experience true financial harm. You know, think of it as, my definition isn't, oh, my portfolio's down this year. That's not true harm, because it's temporary, most likely. True harm is it undermines your ability to accomplish what you want in retirement. That's true harm. You may be in volatile markets, not really be experiencing true financial harm and undermining of your ability to accomplish what you want. But you might experience a horrific emotional reaction to that, which then causes you to clench up and not spend, even if, theoretically, you could still do it financially. So it's a two-pronged monster here, two-horned monster. I just made that up. I don't know if it makes sense. But it's not just the financial mathematical piece. It's also the emotional human piece, too.
Exactly. And it's the emotional risk was the other reason I came up with the concept of positioning, which, again, isn't some brilliant thing that I thought up. It was just applying simple, basic asset liability mapping techniques through retirement rather than trying to limit clients to the safe withdrawal rate. And we've talked and done shows on this before, so I don't want to get too deep into the safe withdrawal rate. Chris and I don't believe in it because of the emotional aspects. You see your big portfolio dropping, maybe whatever your safe withdrawal is. And in the industry right now, there's a big argument. Is it 3? Is it 3.3? Is it 4? Is it 4.7? Is it 2.8? These are all real numbers that are being bantered around as the safe withdrawal rate right now. You may have enough money, Chris, where any of those percentages would give you a good amount of money to spend every year. But if you see your portfolio dropping, it's human nature not to want to spend it. It just is. It's the emotional reaction to a down market, to your money being smaller. Not to mention, Chris, there is the do-it-yourselfers who comprise the vast majority of our listeners. They are going to be emotional when it comes time to consuming their assets. They spent their whole life growing it. And we hear from listeners all the time who say, yes, that's happened to me. They can't bring themselves, Chris, to spending their money. And in a down market, they'll tighten up even worse. More. Mm-hmm. And here's the problem, and Chris alluded to it, but I experienced it. Your life can change in an instant at any time. And everyone knows, if you've been listening to this podcast for a long time, I nearly passed away in November of 2020 when I suffered a significant stroke. And I spent far too much time trying to save myself and drag myself out of the barn to lay there, Chris, on the floor of the barn, wallowing in, oh, why me? Why me? But there was one moment that I did lay, and I shared this on the podcast in the past, where I was laying on the barn, the floor of the barn, and there were two thoughts going through my head. If I live, how am I going to pay to take care of myself? I'm only 57. I can live another 30 years, and I may need help. And I hadn't purchased long-term care insurance, and I shared openly the whole story behind that. I won't get into it. But I also, Chris, laid there thinking very briefly, because I had to get back to trying to get myself out of the barn, I laid there thinking of all the things I didn't do. And why didn't I? And I wish I could have done them. Now, everything worked out good for me. And if you want to hear how, listen to the podcast on how I saved myself. But what I want people to understand, why Chris and I adopt this way of positioning and getting people to position, is because in a down market, we don't want you to cut fun. And the industry so much, Chris, in my opinion, erroneously, they shouldn't take this attitude, but they do. Oh, it's only fun things. You can cut that. So if your portfolio drops, don't worry. You're just going to cut your spending X percent.
And then you can make it up later, right?
Yeah. You don't know if there's going to be a tomorrow. We're not 20 anymore, still getting not necessarily younger, but stronger. All through our teens and 20s and into our 30s, we develop and we get better. Now, again, a medical doctor may say, well, after a certain age, you're really not, but you feel better. I felt really good in my 20s and in my 30s. Not so much as I got into my 40s and 50s and eventually my 60s. I can feel my body changing. Our point is, you're entering the last third of your life. If you want to keep managing your assets as one big portfolio like you did during your accumulation phase and panic when market volatility sets in, as some of you may be, or starting to overthink this. Oh my God, do I have too much in this? Should I do that? What about this? Well, I just read this article on the forum that this thing is going to go up, but that's going to go down. And start overanalyzing this like the engineer mind that you have. Or do you want to enjoy your retirement? So our approach is to get you to start positioning your money. Why I came up with this idea on the podcast today, though, is one of the more common tools that we use in positioning is once we do a retirement analysis for someone, we really can start to break out and come up with our concept of fund number. I don't think we need to get into that, Chris. What do you think?
We talk about it a lot, and we've done extensive shows on that. So I think people understand what that is. To summarize it super quickly, it's literally the amount of your liquid assets that's readily available for you to spend purely discretionary without any worry, with little worry. I hate to say without any, but with very little worry that spending that pool is going to affect anything that you've prioritized above fun.
Exactly. And we did a two-part show, I think a couple months ago on that. So you can find it and listen to our concept of a fun number. One of the things we do with fun spending, as well as shortages in a minimum dignity floor that are often present during a phase we call the delay period, which is when you're delaying turning on all the secure income you're entitled to, whether that's delaying an annuity payment, a pension payment, or Social Security payments. During the delay period, you need to make sure that the money that's going to go to your food, utilities, transportation, housing, and health care is there, is ready, available, is safe, and not exposed to market volatility. Well, the same thing holds true, folks, at least in my humble opinion, to your fund spending during the go-go phase. Remember, we break fund spending into go-go, slow-go, no-go phases. We fully admit we did not come up with those terms. Another financial advisor from Colorado with the last name of Stein, just like Chris, but no relation, came up with that in the 1970s, I believe it was. But it was his concept, and we just loved it, and we use that verbiage. But the go-go spending, to me, Chris, is your last hurrah. It's the last hurrah before human aging and life, if you will, get in the way of things. It's when you have the health, inclination, desire, and ability to do fun things. And one of the tools we use for making sure that fund spending is protected, we use a tool called a multi-year guaranteed annuity, or MYGA. M-Y-G-A.
Before you get to the tool, let me just mention real quick for people who might not have heard us talk about this before, the early positioning or the positioning for the early years of both possible minimum dignity floor exposure from the delay period or that go-go fund spending is that we want you to build a moat around yourself and your ability to spend with a certain amount of cash, keeping it simple, readily available liquid cash or equivalents. And then a certain period of expected spending that will be satisfied with assets that we are protecting the principal or protecting them from going down. We call them principal protected assets that are going to fund the spending that's going to happen so soon that you can't absorb market volatility, but not so soon that you need to have it held as cash. That's kind of what we're talking about. And MYGAs are a very popular tool for that principal protection piece that I just described. Not the only tool out there, but we get asked a lot of questions about this because we tend to like them in the appropriate case.
So we tend to like them, as Chris said, for more immediate spending that we're trying to protect. I don't think I would ever recommend a multi-year guaranteed annuity for spending that might be needed in 8, 10, 12, 15 years from now.
Right.
The interest that these products pay right now is far too low. What's nice in the future, if interest rates ever do rise, and they can go up and they can go down, as you know, just like equities go up and down, interest rates can go up and down. If interest rates ever get to a high rate again, now if they're driven to a high rate due to inflationary pressures, these interest rates may not really matter much. But if inflationary pressures could eventually abate, they could begin to matter again. But if you can start getting interest rates at 5, 6, 7% guaranteed, I'd be a little more receptive to using a MIGA for longer term preservation needs. We tend to use them for 3, 4, 5 year periods. Sometimes people we work with will override us and ask for 6, 7 year protection periods. I've never, at least to my memory, I could be wrong. I do have a dead spot in my head. I don't think I ever used them for more than 7 years.
I don't believe I did.
At least a MIGA. Anyways,
very, very, you know, popular for people who are embracing our positioning ideas for those 3, 4, 5 year. Those are the bulk of where people are using these things.
Right. And essentially, folks, they work just like a CD. We've talked about this before. Why are we going to mention it again? Well, something really unique, as I've been helping some people recently consider these as part of their plan, I've been looking at some of the interest rates. And yeah, they're going up, still not at a level that are going to blow your socks off, if you will. But they are at levels which, relative to what you can get, say, in a 10-year treasury, which is kind of a standard measure, especially with mortgages, the 10-year treasury. I'm looking today, the 10-year treasury, at least as of the day we're recording this on the 25th, the 10-year treasury is at 1.78 on a 10-year treasury, meaning if you could purchase directly from the U.S. Treasury and you went to the U.S. Treasury and gave them some money, they would sell you a bond where they're going to guarantee to pay you interest of 1.78%, Chris, guaranteed for 10 years. Mm-hmm. Okay. The thing that is unique with MIGAs is the insurance companies offer short-term fixed income products with very, very competitive long-term rates relative to a 10-year treasury. What do I mean by that? You can get right now a 4-year MIGA paying 2.55%. So the government will give you 1.78 for 10 years, or an insurance company will give you 2.55 for 4 years. That's 43% more interest. Or put another way, folks, in order for the 10-year to start paying 2.55, interest rates would have to rise 43%. And it could be a significant pullback in the fixed income market, because as interest rates go up, the price of fixed income goes down. What is unique about MIGAs when you buy them is your principal is 100% protected, as well as the interest that you're going to earn.
It's essentially a contract between you and the insurance company, and they're agreeing to pay you that contractual rate. And so there's no ambiguity as to what's going on in that relationship.
Correct. And in 2 years, could MIGAs or 10-year treasuries, rather, be paying 2.55? Absolutely. They could be doing it by the end of this year, depending on what interest rates do. But the point is, you are not going to suffer the principal decline that your fixed income will suffer while interest rates are rising to 2.55. It's one reason we try to avoid fixed income, or at least intermediate and sometimes short duration fixed income products, because they are not fully principal protected. And because of the unique structure of MIGAs, what goes on behind the scenes, how the insurance companies can pay this extra interest, has to do with the cash flow, has to do with hedging that the insurance company is actually selling the MIGAs for. They often use MIGAs to hedge some of the risk they have of other insurance they carry, specifically life insurance, because a annuity is the mirror opposite of life insurance. So there's a lot of uniquenesses going on with annuities, and especially MIGAs, that they can, Chris, actually a short-term four-year product be paying 43% more interest than a 10-year government product. And that's only one particular MIGA. There are other MIGAs. There's another company offering 3% for 5 years. So you can do a 5 year, but you have to put $250,000 in that one. The other one that I just mentioned, you only have to put $50,000 in. So when you purchase a MIGA, there's a lot of moving parts. That's what I'm trying to get you to understand. But one thing unique to our firm, and some of our colleagues or others would describe themselves as competitors. I think everyone in our industry should be a colleague. I don't think, do you think doctors actually go running around thinking, oh, he's a competitor.
Right. No,
he's a doctor too. I hate him.
Maybe some do, but I don't, that's not the vibe I get from them.
But in our industry, folks, my God, you meet another financial planner, it's like, oh, God. And there's like, oh, he's a competitor. No, he's a colleague. He or she is a colleague. Anyways, we do something unique at our firm. And that's why I have a lot of this information that I'm sharing with you on these interest rates. There are two ways, Chris, to buy a MIGA. What do I mean by that?
Well, the first way is what I'd call the traditional way, where most insurance products have always been constructed through a sales channel that included commissions. So there was an agent that placed the policy, the annuity in this particular case, with the purchaser, and that agent was paid a commission. The newer way, and it's newer, I don't remember the first time this was available in the MIGAs, but it's pretty recently here. There's a lot of folks that don't operate on a commission-based model. We would be one of those, to, you know, included in that category. And I say commission-based because we do offer MIGAs, since we're talking about it today, to people sometimes that pay a commission. But there are some now that don't pay a commission, which is great news, because the logical conclusion to that is that you would receive more interest being credited to the purchaser of the MIGA than a MIGA where a commission has to be shaved off of that relationship. That's the hope. And maybe someday that will always hold true. But Jim, you shared with me some interesting information you've recently ran across.
Yeah, and we've said this before because we've received emails on this show about it. And we often said there are not a lot of MIGAs being sold in what is called the fee-based arena or commission-free arena. I hate to use the word commission-free because even a commission-free MIGA pays a commission. It gets a little confusing. You have to understand my industry, folks. There is the advisor who's going to make the recommendation and help put you in it. But the advisor does not work directly with the insurance company. The advisor will have to use a wholesaler. Insurance companies, unless they're captive agent companies or certain other companies, Nationwide is one of them, who will sell directly to an advisor, assuming the advisor has the appropriate licenses. But for the vast majority, they work through what is called the wholesale channel. So even a insurance product that doesn't pay my firm one red cent will pay the wholesaler for their work in facilitating the application, making sure everything is in good order, making sure it gets to the insurance company, and making sure everything works. That's what a wholesaler does. They're more of the administrative side of the industry. They do get paid a fee. So I hate to use the word commission-free, Chris, mm-hmm. because technically they are paying right. a wholesaler to help them. So you will hear them called a lot commission-free. I like to call them fee-free. based and just explain to clients, I'm not going to make anything, but the company that I'm going to go through to facilitate the sale, the middleman, if you will, the wholesaler, they will be paid. And it's just the way they got to get paid somehow.
Right.
And that's how the insurance industry does it. Okay, so that's the little blurb there. What we're trying to get people to understand is, and advisors who are listening to this as well, and spare the one-star Jim's an idiot ratings that you may put on iTunes. I'm not an idiot. I'm just speaking openly and honestly with you. Don't be too quick to want to adopt the quote-unquote fee-only marketing gimmick that advisors do. Gimmick is a harsh term. I apologize for that. Marketing approach, let's call it, that a lot of advisors like to use. They like to say we're fee only. We will never utilize a product that pays as a commission.
Yeah, I describe that usually as painting themselves into a corner right now, because they're using that as a marketing method, and not necessarily anything wrong with it, but you have to realize what you're restricting yourself from being able to do by honoring that fee only mantra, which might be ultimately a very responsible thing to do. But your MIGA example that you're going to lay on us here now is, you know, good evidence as to why it's a little hard to do that if you're truly trying to do everything possible to find the best outcomes for your clients.
Correct. So if you're trying to do this yourself, folks, you are not going to be able to purchase a commission free. And again, with my little asterisk, there's a wholesale who's going to make money. You can't buy direct commission free because no one makes money on them. Insurance companies aren't going to sell them to you. Wholesale is not going to. I don't know of any companies right now that sell direct to consumer a commission free MIGA. Now, you can get insurance products, you Vanguardians, through Vanguard. And I know a lot of you got a little antsy when Transamerica took over Vanguard's business. But Transamerica makes money. The insurance company is going to make money. There's always going to be someone making money. But a lot of the products, and I don't know yet, I'll decide as the show goes on if I'm going to actually name the companies, Chris, or just name their ratings and what they are. I haven't decided. I don't know if I want to start naming companies on a show, especially one that might get listened to later. So,
I'd probably vote for not naming them. Just use these anonymous examples.
I'll keep it private.
Perfect.
So back to what's going on and what I'm trying to talk to the industry about, and you do-it-yourselfers who can't stand the financial services industry. One of the things I found when we started creating this business years ago, and especially when I took my firm to a registered investment advisor, RIA firm, fiduciary, in the state of Colorado, we're state registered. We're not SEC registered yet, although we're almost there. One of the things I saw, Chris, when it came to insurance, I started seeing that the annuities that don't pay us anything weren't necessarily paying more, especially MIGAs and SPIAs, than what I could get on the commission side. And I talked openly to the wholesalers who sell the commission-free, quote-unquote, commission-free products through advisors. I says, why aren't my clients going to get more interest? And they said one simple word, competition. Mm-hmm. There are tremendously more insurance companies right now. This could change 5, 8, 10 years from now. Hopefully by then I'll be retired, but this could change in the future. But right now there are hundreds of companies competing in the MIGA field against each other. And remember what I said earlier, folks, insurance companies often use MIGA sales for hedging other risks. So there's a strong demand a lot on insurance companies. And if they need more MIGAs, how do they get more? they offer more interest. So the wholesaler that we worked with warned me of this. And it's one reason, folks, I decided not to give up my insurance license. Because to me, to be a true fiduciary, I have to look at both. I have to look for the sake of my clients on the commission side and the commission-free side and tell my clients, this is what it is. The commission side, here's what I can get you. The commission-free side, here's what I can get you. On the commission side, I will make a commission and this is how much you get. On the commission-free side, I will not earn a commission. Here's how much you get and here's how much I'm going to charge you. And that's the other crucial element, Chris, on the commission-free side. And we're going to go through this when I give some of these examples. That very same wholesaling firm that I decided to use to help me purchase, their specialty is fee-based, commission-free, in quotes, insurance products for registered investment advisory firms, such as the firm I own. So they exist to help firms like mine. When I chatted with them, one of the questions I asked them was, how do other advisors that work with you get paid for putting people in these MIGAs if they're not going to be paid? I had an idea in my head how I was going to do it. What did they say, Chris?
They weren't thinking along the same lines we were. They were thinking, hey, let's just include this in our AUM wrapper and calculation, which I hope people who understood what I just said started to have the hair on the back of their neck stand up. Because essentially what that means is the commission is, you would forego the commission, but they would charge you annually a percentage of the value of this MIGA, as if it were an asset class in your portfolio that they're managing, a recurring annual fee instead of a one-time commission. I'm not saying it's definitely worse, but that sounds like you've just taken a commission-based product you're trying to get away from and replaced it with something that might be even worse for the end consumer. So
exactly.
It's worth looking at. You got to look at it. Maybe the math will work out in certain circumstances, but it made me cringe when I heard that's how the vast majority of RIAs were handling this.
And that's one of the issues I had. When you buy a MIGA on the commission side, commission side of the ledger, folks, you know exactly what you're getting. Let's just say it's going to pay 2.5, I'm just making this number up. It's going to pay 2.5% in interest. So you know, on a commission product, that's what I'm going to get. I, meaning you. That's what you as the consumer will receive. And let's say it was for 4 years. 2.5% for 4 years. And let's say on the commission-free side, there was one paying 2.7%. For 4 years. Again, totally making these numbers up. But your advisor was going to levy an AUM fee on it. They were just going to treat that MIGA as any other asset class in the portfolio that they're managing. So if they're recommending that you put some of your money in safety, and perhaps they're worried about rising interest rates, or they want a bond alternative, or they're specifically doing what we do, asset liability mapping, and they say, hey, we're going to put 300,000 of, making these numbers up again, folks, put 300,000 of your assets in this multi-year guaranteed annuity paying 2.7. We're not going to make any commission off of this sale, and we're going to treat it as just another asset in your asset management with us. Now you have to adjust that 2.7, Chris, for the management fee to figure out exactly what you're getting. And was it truly better than paying an upfront commission and getting 2.5 for 4 years? You follow what I'm trying to explain?
I do. I think it's pretty easy math. And I would again, if you're holding it in there and it's going to be charged an AUM fee for a short period of time, that's one thing. But if it's going to be in there for 3 to 5 years, that cumulative fee that they're charging you to, quote, manage it is way worse than it's going to undermine the bonus, if you want to call it that, that you're getting by choosing the commission-free product. That's what's so out of balance right now in the commission-free versus commissioned insurance world, and why I think it totally makes sense, even though you might be fee-based, which is what you would probably describe our firm as, but occasionally there's something that has a commission, not being presented because it has a commission, but because it might have the most attractive characteristics for the person buying it.
So what I did is I don't want to get too deep in how we do it, but in short, folks, if you're a client and we're doing positioning for you, I'll put it this way. If you are a retirement planning client where we don't have to manage your assets and you are having us do positioning, we will either give you the numbers through the retirement plan, and then if you're a do-it-yourselfer or if you're working with another advisor, you figure out what investments to purchase. We don't give advice on assets we do not manage. And if we tell you, well, you should consider this or that, or put $200,000 here or there, we'll give you the general breakdown of your pie slices or your position. You, as the do-it-yourselfer, will go find the investments that fit it appropriately. However, not everybody wants to do that, and a lot of people will work with us to actually manage their portfolio and do the positioning. For our clients in that category, Chris, we simply treat these commission-free MIGAs truly as another asset class, and we do not charge on them. Yeah.
The difference is, because that just, the way you described that, it sounded like what we just criticized others for doing. The difference is we cap our AUM fee.
Correct.
So when you have that MIGA sitting on top of everything else, it's not increasing the AUM fee. That's the difference. If it does, you really have to weigh, is this commission-free choice actually net better than the one-and-done commission product?
It's a little involved and hard to do without being on a video show to really explain to you. But basically, when we work with people, once you get to about $350,000 to about $550,000 in assets, every dollar above that, you pay no more if we're managing your portfolio. We cap our fee. Our fee pretty much caps out around $350,000 to $550,000. I don't want to get too deep into it, but that's how we do it. So if we have people with several million dollars and we're helping them manage it, we make no more or less with your big portfolio. So whether you're in a MIGA or not, it doesn't matter. But that to me was important because I couldn't see trying to put people in a commission-free MIGA and then charge an AUM, asset under management fee, on top of it, and thump my chest at saying I'm fee only, I don't sell those evil commission products, and I'm getting my client 1, 2, 3/10 of a percent more interest, yet you're taking from it in fees. So also what we're trying to say, if you are shopping and you're a do-it-yourselfer and you're trying to figure this out, really look at both aisles, if you will. You're going to have a hard time finding someone who will put you in a commission-free MIGA because they make no money. And we do, I don't like to sound like a commercial. In certain cases, we will help people who do not have a relationship with us purchase one of these MIGAs for a fixed expense. And let me just leave it at that. So you might find people who will assist you, but it might be difficult. If you're working with, though, a financial planner, that's where I'm trying to go with this, and they are offering you these products, you've got to ask them, How are they going to be paid? That's what's key. What is my return going to be after I pay your fee? And is it a one-time fee? Is it an ongoing fee? What do I have to pay to buy that commission-free MIGA? Okay, right. Why did we want to mention all that? Recently, we started doing some help with some people who are interested in this. And uniquely, the person who gave me the idea for the show had done a lot of the calculations, Chris, and wanted to put, I think it's a little over 100,000, I can't remember, in, and I believe it was a six-year MIGA, specifically for fund spending. And that was key when we reviewed his proposal to us. He crunched the numbers and asked us, what do you think? And then, can you help me? One of the things we wanted to key in on is, what is the MIGA being assigned to? In other words, the deferred spending that the MIGA is going to cover, is the inflationary pressures on that deferred spending significantly greater than the guaranteed fixed rate of interest, which I've already explained to you is significantly higher than the bond market, but is it high enough to keep pace with the inflationary pressures? It's one reason we don't use MIGAs for longer term holdings. We can't get enough growth out of them to keep pace with inflationary pressures, so we have to take on risk. But on shorter term needs, 3, 4, 5 years, we either will chat openly with the client, Chris, and say, we're going to get this much, but we think the inflationary pressures are a little bit more, so you might be losing a little bit of money every year on it. You are comfortable with that? Sometimes people are, believe it or not. When you're in the distribution phase, it's a matter of making sure the money is there. But in this case, it was for fun spending. And why were we okay with this, Chris?
Couple things. One, I think that generally fund spending doesn't face quite the pressures of inflation that many of the minimum dignity floor expenses do, particularly healthcare expenses. Over a six-year period, there could be lots and lots of inflationary pressures on healthcare in particular, at least if we look back the last 15 years or so of history and the pricing of healthcare. But fun is a little more competitive, and because it's a discretionary thing, I think the providers of fun aren't as prone to raising their prices as a lot of the deliverers of minimum dignity floor services. So there's that. The other thing, too, when you're assuming inflation potential on your desired or fun spending, is that you can control it a little yourself, a little more than you could with other types of expenses, because it's a little bit easier to make substitutions if what you really, you know, you identified you wanted to do turns out to have inflated too much. There's maybe another thing that's almost as much fun that hasn't had that effect, where you can't really make those substitutions with minimum dignity floor expenses. So fun is a little different animal than the minimum dignity floor expenses. So, you know, this wasn't, as far as the inflationary fears on what this was ultimately going to cover, less of a concern than it otherwise might be.
Correct. So one of the things that we found as we started looking at this is, we thought, okay, we understand his rationale. He did a really good analysis on what he thought his returns would be if he stayed invested the current way that he's managing his portfolio. And he felt, Chris, in light of some research that he was doing, that the MIGA, from a risk-adjusted basis, was going to offer him, without taking on any investment risk, offer him a rate of return that he felt closely mimicked what he truly expected the next 6 years in the equity and bond markets to return. He did a little bit of research. He found what a few companies, I don't want to name the companies, were projecting equity and fixed income holdings to be returning. He looked at his allocation and he just did a weighted average, Chris. And he started realizing, you know, I think I would be better off and sleep better.
Yeah.
Knowing, he said, this money was protected. Why take on the risk? This was a calculation he did. We didn't push this or anything. He just reached out to us and says, what do y'all think? And can you help me? So he actually went out and found the MIGA he wanted. He got the MIGA that he wanted on the commission side because he has no access to commission-free MIGAs. And for the dollar amount that he wanted to put in and for the term that he wanted 6 years, he found a annuity on the commission side that would pay Chris, where is my notes, 2.55% for 6 years, which was the length that he wanted. So I just thought, well, let me go out and see on the commission-free side. I'm curious what one could get on the commission-free side for that term. And here's where it gets difficult. There's not a lot of there's precious few companies. And I couldn't get that exact term that he was looking for on the commission-free side to match exactly the 6 year period that he wants. I could get a 3, I could get a 5, I could get a 7. I couldn't get a 6, and he wanted it for exactly 6 years. So instead, I started looking a little bit deeper and I saw, well, there's a 4 year on the commission free side. Maybe he would be interested in that. So I looked at the 4 year, and for the dollar amount that he was going to put in, that 4 year, Chris, would pay just 2.45. And he can get a 6 year at 2.55. And I thought, well, that's not that compelling. Let me look more at the products that might be available. Did I explain so far this, or do you think I need to go a little deeper, the interest rates? You follow them?
No, these are all annual rates, so you get that as a rate per year. So, yeah, these are simple products, so pretty straightforward to understand.
But here's a few things as I started looking around. On the commission-free side, for the dollar amount he wanted to put in, and for the term that he wanted a 6 year term. I couldn't find it. I found a 4 year at 2.45. I started thinking, what if this was a different situation, but what if this was an advisor who was going to place a fee on top of the 2.45? Why wouldn't they recommend the 2.55, even though it was 6 years instead of four? So I got a hold of the wholesaler on the commission side, and he says, hey, Jim, that very insurance company that your client called you about offers MIGAs from 4 to 10 years, and they all pay 2.55. I was like, really? He says, you can get on the commission side a 4, a 5, a 6, a 7. I don't know if there's an 8 or 9 because he didn't mention it. He just jumped straight to 10. And he said they all pay 2.55. And then my whole outlook, Chris, changed. By having access to that information, I turned around and I started thinking, would he want to lock his money up in a rising interest rate environment for 6 years at 2.55? Or would he be better off choosing a 4 year at 2.55 with the exact same company? Because perhaps in 4 more years, interest rates would be substantially higher. And he could either purchase a new MIGA with the proceeds, use those proceeds, roll it into another one. Mm-hmm. It might give him a little more flexibility. Mm-hmm. I'm going to let him decide that. I haven't even presented him with this yet. But it just got me to start to realize on the commission side or the commission-free side, you have to really look at everything closely. So I started digging even deeper. And I found, well, you can get on the commission-free side 3%, Chris, for 5 years, but he would have to put in nearly twice what he was willing to put in or needed to put in. I did not think that would be an appropriate recommendation to put in more than twice. But you can see, folks, there's all these different, if you're going to consider a MIGA, there's all these different what ifs. What if I do this? What if I do that? On the going back to the companies offering these, on the 2.55, which is a commission product, Chris, the company is an A-rated company with a Comdex score of 83. This is important. Why don't you explain what that means? Because if you're going to consider a MIGA, folks, whether you're dealing on the commission side or the commission-free side, you should always ask. We find the Comdex score much easier to understand than the ratings, but you can look at both. What's Comdex, Chris?
So Comdex is a more holistic rating, and it's a difference in numerical score. As you heard, this company that Jim's referencing has a Comdex of 83. That means there's only 17% of insurance companies that have a higher score, at least the way I understand the Comdex. I'm not a Comdex expert, but it's a ranking, if you will. With the highest number, you can get 100, correct, Jim? There's not any that the way they've scheduled it. It's they measure it all against a perfect score of 100.
Correct.
Yeah. So 83 sounds like a B, but that just means that it's, you know, definitely in the top quarter of insurance companies as far as strength and reliability, et cetera, goes. It's a little bit easier to understand that number, that numerical score, than A versus A plus versus A plus plus, et cetera. It doesn't really describe to you the relative differences between those types of ratings. But really, you know, if you've got a nice strong Comdex score like this in an A-rated company, quite reliable is the expectation. There's really little concern, if any, that they wouldn't be able to fulfill their promise on paying this MIGA.
Correct. So as I kept researching, I then found, okay, on the commission-free side, I could match it up exactly, finally, because there's so few. So I found a commission-free or fee-based MIGA 4 years, Chris, and for the amount of money that the gentleman wants to put in would pay 2.45. If he would put a little bit more in, I think $5,000 or $10,000 more, he could get 2.55 with this fee-based MIGA.
But see, that's where things are out of whack right immediately, that you've got a commission product and a non-commission product that are both essentially offering the same rate. What the heck is the benefit to the non-commission piece? And then it becomes a really bad story if you're going to be charged a management fee on the MIGA value itself.
That's my point. And that's my issue with a lot of advisors. And please, advisors, I'm not throwing you under the bus. I get your business model. I'm encouraging you to not askew. I hope that's the correct word. Is that the correct word? To ignore?
That's actually a very powerful word coming from you.
Oh, thank you.
Very nice.
I'm encouraging, don't ignore the commission side. You can't, because here's another kicker with this, Chris. Yes, if the person in question with his numbers would put more in, so let's just assume he agreed to it, he can get 2.55 4 years on the commission side or the commission-free side. If on the commission-free side, he was working with an advisor who was going to charge him on top of that a management fee every year of a half a percent. I did ask that wholesaling company, what is the average fee they see being charged on their MIGAs. I hate to say this, but do you know what the average fee is, he said?
I bet it was
1%. 1%.
Per year.
And that's per year. How is that in the best interest of a client?
Yeah.
But not only that, over the commission, if the interest rate is identical, what am I going to look at? Well, if you're buying a commission free, do you have to pay to buy it? Because you don't pay to buy the commission one. Let's just say there wasn't going to be anything. Let's say they were a client of ours, hypothetically, and this person's not. Let's just say they were asset management client of ours, Chris, where we could put them in the commission-free 4 year paying 2.55. Mm-hmm. I still wouldn't recommend it. You know why? The 2.55 commission-free one is a A-minus company with a Comdex of 58. Mm-hmm. The 2.55 commission one is a A-rated company with a Comdex of 83.
Yep.
Now, for a four-year hold, I wouldn't panic with either company, truly.
True.
I wouldn't.
That's true. But still, that's a difference that you have to consider.
I would have to point that out to the client. Mm-hmm. And you advisors who, again, bash commissions, and justifiably so. There are a lot of commission products out there. But I'm imploring you, because most of the advisors who listen to us, Chris, are young and they're trying to learn. I'm imploring you, if you're an old time do-it-yourself and it's just not your model, I get it, and it's fine, and I have nothing against what you're doing. But if you're young, don't overlook the commission side, because how can you truly be a fiduciary and not look at both sides of the aisles? Because when it comes to MIGAs, there is so much competition on the commission side, you have to look at it. So when I started looking and trying to help this person, the person who did all the work himself, he kind of stumbled in by accident, I think, into the best product. Mm-hmm. But I started looking at it from an advisory standpoint, using all the tools at our disposal, and I was kind of shocked at what I found. That the interest rates are nearly identical in this case to get the 4 years, 2.55 to 2.55 or 2.45 if they put in a little less money, nearly identical interest rates. The big deciding factor was it was a much stronger company, Chris, on the commission side with a higher Comdex score. I think that needs to be pointed out in a fiduciary relationship. So that's all we're trying to say on this to you do-it-yourselfers. Don't ignore the commission guy down the street. Go in and talk to them. I know you hate it, but because there's so much competition in MIGAs, you mm-hmm. might actually get more interest or a same interest with a stronger rated company. And if you are going to buy it on the fee-based side, find out what you're going to pay that advisor to do it, to put you in it. That's all we want to say.
Yeah. So shop around, eyes wide open. That applies to most major purchases anyway. But this is definitely a case. Hopefully this was a bit helpful to you. We kind of blended this show into two things. We reminded you how MIGAs, or principal protection, can play a part in positioning, particularly to handle the spending in the early years of retirement, so you can weather the storm, if you will, during market volatility and early retirement, which can be kind of scary and cause you to clench up and not spend. But then this, you know, we drifted off into this whole comparison thing about being fully aware that you shouldn't completely dismiss one or the other as far as commission or non-commission, at least now. Maybe the non-commission side will get a lot more competition moving forward, and there might come a day in the future that there's no competition ever, it's always better as for the consumer as far as the payout. But we're in that muddy period, that period kind of that one side of the insurance industry is still in its infancy, if you will. And we got to see some more maturity there before I think things get to make sense. This doesn't really make sense with these numbers. But you nailed it with the word competition. I think that's the driving force here that really you can see it in these quotes. So hopefully this is helpful to people.
I hope so. And before we wrap up, real quickly, in defense of the fee base, because I don't want to sound like I'm bashing either one. I'm not. But even though it was significantly more money that would have to go in, it's $250,000, you can get on the fee-based side, commission-free, with an A-plus 92 Comdex company. That's a strong company, paying right now 3% on a five-year. So the point is, folks, that's significantly higher than the 1.78, I believe it was, that the 10-year Treasury is currently paying, 100% principal protection. Don't overlook MIGAs as part of your positioning as a do-it-yourselfer. I know because it has the word annuity in it, you just hate it. But do some research. But again, be careful on that 3% one if you buy it from an advisor. Because it doesn't pay a commission, they're going to charge you. And the fee may eat up a lot of that 3% return.
Right. Last thing I'll mention before we go, we've mentioned a lot of specific numbers here. This is as of today when we record this in January of 2022. If you're listening to this some other time, these may not be the realistic numbers right now. You need to do your own research and make sure you understand all the numbers before you do something. But we wanted to share the numbers because it's just a lot easier to understand. And if we don't talk so vaguely and leave all that out, I think the detail here was warranted so you could really see what was going on.
Right. And, MIGAs change weekly.
Yeah.
The interest rates are set usually every Monday or Tuesday. So again, by time you're listening to this, these rates will most likely have changed. And if you're listening to this 6 months from now or so, again, follow the numbers for the concepts, but we're not saying you can get this right now. We're just trying to share with you, look at both. If you're a do-it-yourselfer, don't ignore the commission side. And if you're an advisor, also don't ignore the commission side at all, even if it means sending the client out of the office and taking assets from your AUM. Oh, horror. I know those AUM guys hate that. But to me, it's the right thing to do sometimes.
Perfect. Well, thanks a lot for everybody listening. We'll scrape up another topic for next week's EDU show and hope you'll join us then.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.